This is Mouth Media Network. Amplify and connect.
Hello, I'm Laura Zave. I'm executive editor at Beauty Streams. And what I love about beauty is that it can never be manufactured. It can only be accentuated.
In the beauty industry, every brand needs vital insights to fuel their brand strategy, marketing initiatives, and product development decisions. That means the need for a trend service at the epicenter of the global beauty community, offering online trend intelligence, trend reports, color forecasts, archives, image banks, online tools, and more. Karen Moon and Abby Wallach sit down and talk with the executive editor of Beauty Streams, which does all of this, on location at Makeup in New York.
From New York City, you're listening to Beauty is Your Business, covering the intersection of innovation and business in the beauty industry. Recorded on location.
Laura, it's so great to be here with you.
Hello,
at Makeup New York.
Hello. Nice to be here.
Thank you for joining us. And Karen, it's great to see you.
Great to be here.
Looking beautiful in your pink taffeta blouse.
Organza.
So tell us, this is such an exciting time. It's September. Everybody's back in action after a nice long summer. Tell us a little bit about what you've been experiencing at Beauty Streams on the makeup trend front over the past few months and how you've been writing about it and curating product, and what are you seeing from your point of view?
So as always, it's a confluence of trends. We're seeing the continued rise of vegan formulations. Mm-hmm. And there was an interesting article in The Economist not so long ago that reported that about 25% of Americans identify themselves as vegan, and mostly millennials. And whether that's true or not, perhaps identifying oneself as vegan is shorthand for seeking clean, non-toxic formulations. So in terms of makeup trends and makeup products, we're seeing it as a kind of price of entry that makeup is going down the vegan route. And marrying clean formulas with a premium luxury positioning. So the two don't need to be mutually exclusive, mm-hmm. that you can actually have it all. You can have both. You can feel glam and feel confident that you're not covering yourself up with the toxic stuff.
So when you say vegan, just out of curiosity, can you expand on what that, how would you define vegan in terms of makeup?
Non-animal products, mm-hmm. so not lanolin, no beeswax, no honey ingredients or propolis. So plant-based, nothing chemical, good for your skin. It's, you know, there's the official definition of vegan, but there's also the shorthand.
Right.
So that there are ingredients that you don't want to see on the label. What you do increasingly want to see on the label are the certifications that you trust. So we're seeing lots of stamps and certifications, but if you actually look closer, you want to see the gold standard ones, like Leaping Bunny, which mm-hmm. is about all the ingredients that have been kept off the product. You want to see Cosmos, EcoCert, the heavyweights in certification.
I mean, how does the FDA play into that? Because it's such a, there's so many trade magazines and there's so many bloggers and everybody's talking about vegan and healthy and natural. And then you say, I actually didn't even know that a honey would be considered not vegan,
because
right?
it's not plant.
Right. So it's really based.
I mean, when you think about the food industry, mm-hmm. and you think about friends or yourself or people in your family who are vegans, it's no animal-based products, no milk, no dairy, no meat,
right.
no fish. I mean, it's one of those cases of, okay, well, what do you eat?
Right. Have you figured that out?
Right. I haven't figured that out.
Grains, fruits, vegetables. Like,
right. It's a problem.
What do you eat? No gluten, no vegan. I mean, no animal. Right. No dairy. Uh-huh. No eggs. Okay, what is there left?
So what are you eating? Yes. Just grass.
Grass and water.
How come you're not, you
know. That's how you say skinny.
Yeah, right. But...
So you gave a presentation earlier today. What were some of the highlights that you shared with the audience here?
So the highlights were looking at key macro trends and associated consumer tribes. So as always, there are five there are pillars. They're not so much trends as values, big shifts and waves. And we're always looking at advances in science, well-being, which we like to think of as well plus being. You know, well-being is such an overused term that we think we know what it means, but we're trying to drill down deep and what it really means to live and be well. We're looking, you know, the one that excites me the most, new codes. So new codes, when we look at today, I was reading an article recently about 71 new gender terms. You know, us naive ones were, we grew up, filled a form, male or female. But now I was surveying a list of, you know, five different permutations of cis, cis male, cis female, gender nonconforming, gender fluid, bi-spiritual. It's endless. And for me, what fascinates me about new codes and the link to beauty is that what used to be considered niche is now mainstream. How will we talk about it? It's never been more exciting, linguistically speaking, as a linguistics expert, to think about, you know, it used to be that Esperanto, once upon a time, was the wish for global language. Esperanto translates into one who hopes, but emoticons are the global language. So as emoticons develops as a global language, how will it translate into how brands talk about their products? We talk about brand storytelling, but do we really think ahead the next 5 to 10 years? Maybe there will be no more words on products. Maybe it will be emoticon equations or...
That's interesting. Iconography is just already so prevalent in branding and work. It's like, it's almost like, you know, part of the
culture.
But it really does transcend the way that we communicate. I mean, different continents, languages. It is. So who's going to take a lead on going beyond the smiley face or the wink? Yeah. And how will it translate into benefits and values that we really trust at a glance?
Well, it's interesting too, because when you look at the data science of it, we actually did a project because we do like NLP, natural language processing, and one of our data scientists actually a while back started looking at emoticons. But when you also think about looking at how they can be, even when they're sarcastic, you still have the same problems. You know,
give me an example of an emoticon that communicates, because I need to use that one.
A good example of being sarcastic with English language is like, oh, that's so badass. Like, that could be interpreted in different ways.
Right.
And so I think we look at humor in such an interesting way that, like, an emoticon that's like, oh, like, I'm sad. Are you really sad? Or are you just, like, saying that, like, you know, it's just like how we communicate in terms of humor has changed.
Absolutely.
And like, gifts and stuff like that.
And so emoticons. Is that why I don't understand anything anymore?
Right. But emoticons,
help me.
Emoticons don't communicate any nuance. I refuse to use them altogether.
You have to be careful, too, because they can be very misleading. It is can be interpreted in different ways.
Or just dumbing down, childlike. So we think about beauty streams. We think about what the future of iconography is going to be, and mastering this new language. We talk a lot about packaging and repurposing and recycling. We're increasingly talking about zero waste and zero waste packaging or circular economies. And you know, so there are the tangible aspects of the future of makeup and beauty. Mm-hmm. But then there's also the intangible side of what is the future of storytelling? Where will it go? What do we want to communicate? But will we be successful in communicating that and differentiating ourselves in the marketplace on behalf of our clients?
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Yes. So as you're saying this, I'm thinking more literal in terms of actual makeup, right? And now today we see so many collections with, you know, it used to be 5 shades of foundation. Now it's 40 shades of foundation.
It's like an arms race.
Right.
In shades. It's like, okay, you have 40? I can have 45. I'll give you 50. I'll have 60. Now I've seen some brands offering 70. But at Beauty Streams, what we're doing is we're looking beyond. We're thinking about how are we going to match, how are we going to help our brands match shades? What are the technologies to offer that? How are we going to think about product forms that go beyond shade matching? How are pigments going to react with skin, different skin tones?
Right. Will that play into these new, gender specific, so to speak? Like you just said, there were so many new terms.
I think that in terms of, are you asking who these products will be geared and suited to? I think that.
Yeah, because that, now there's makeup for men, right? On another level.
I think so.
Was that too niche?
So, what I would answer is gender is now a spectrum.
Right.
It's not binary, it's a spectrum. So I don't think brands will be targeting products to specific genders, more like specific skin types.
Okay.
So for example, if male skin is sweatier,
mm-hmm.
or if it's hairier, mm-hmm. you know, that maybe certain formulations will need to adhere better and be longer lasting. So it's more skin types and skin concerns rather than who are you.
Right.
It's not a profile anymore. It's what does your skin respond to?
So that being said, do you think consumers will start shopping differently
for
products?
Yes, but consumers, they will, but they need to have the tools.
Right.
It sounds fantastic to say you have 60 shades. If you're a shopper like me, just give me, max 5 to choose from, because otherwise I will walk out of the shop or shut my computer and I will feel overwhelmed. But if you have the tools and the ease of access of how to use the tools, then make it easy.
It's like the paradox of choice.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But also, I think it's the kind of the brand new age of sampling, actually.
Right.
You know, it's I could foresee the makeup equivalent of a Warby Parker, where
it's so funny. Actually, I just got that Olima Pure sent me like 25 samples to choose one, and even then I was like, "What?" But it is interesting because it helps with the shade
absolutely.
Range, and you have a loyal
and
customer.
Try it in the privacy. Make it fun. Make it easy. Make it a pleasure.
Well,
don't make it a challenge. Like, does it really matter? By the way, okay, if it's close and really close, if you're struggling between 2 or 3, help the customer figure out, you know, what might be right. Does anyone really know what their undertones are?
Right.
Do you? I think mine are blue.
Well, I've been around a while, so I've been working
that.
But then it changed.
Well,
it's interesting because it's like more of an advanced thing, and the average consumer probably doesn't understand pinks versus yellows
or
like how to think about it.
But as we're seeing with ingredient labels, the level of education amongst all of us in the population is becoming really impressive.
Right.
And there are certain brands out there that are doing a phenomenal job of not just being sober and serious and saying keep this off your skin, but bringing playfulness. You know, we at Beauty Streams, we saw one, there are fun ways that brands can play with this, for example, by saying 100% vegan apple, you know, things like that just send up the seriousness of the jargon and the concerns. So again, it's a marriage of feeling good about your choices, but not excluding pleasure. It can coexist. And we're also seeing that, for example, in the eco movement, that in order to communicate serious eco credentials, the shades had to be shades of brown or green. So at Beauty Streams, we identified the 2020 shade is beetroot, which is a luscious, beetroot color, which is mouth-watering and vibrant and really the most gorgeous face of nature. And we're seeing more and more the colors, for example, in makeup products will have these stunning shades that we first see in nature that, you know, up until now we've basically kept out of the serious eco skincare brands or makeup brands because we thought that, okay, if you're having recycled packaging, it needs to look very sober. But now the price of entry is serious eco. So let's move beyond and let's have fun and let's play again. Let's have it all.
Well, it sounds like also technology will have a big play opportunity.
Technology and design. Technology and design. So I would, of course, technology. And it's a key part of our work is to keep pace, not just with technology within the beauty industry, but also developments in all kinds of industries. Because it's a quirky fact that often, you know, the biggest and best ideas come in adjacent categories.
Of course.
But also design. So, for example, when you consider the amount of waste in beauty, mm-hmm. secondary packaging, primary packaging, it's a shocking amount. Waste is considered to be a design flaw. So the latest term that we're seeing that might sound unrealistic, but is actually gaining traction is zero waste packaging. So in a circular economy, the goal of a circular economy uh-huh. is to eliminate any kind of waste. So,
right.
for example, the brand Lush, the British retailer Lush, has opened stores with zero packaging. Mm-hmm. Products don't even have labels. You put your phone, you put the QR code over the product itself. It sends you straight to the website that identifies the product, delivers the benefits, shares the ingredients, how to use it. But what we're seeing now is the aspiration is not just to recycle and repurpose, it's to eliminate waste. So in a circular economy, there is no waste. And if waste is considered a design flaw, conversely, design can fix the issue of waste. So it's a big challenge to the design community, and we work closely with all facets of the industry, including packaging and design, of how design can solve the problem of waste.
I'm curious to know like what your thoughts are on packaging trends, because there's a lot of really cool companies innovating in this space. Obviously, still a long way to go where it's more compostable. But also another trend I've been seeing is formulations that are going more powder-based. In home goods, there's some really cool companies like Blue Land, but also like in the space here, we have powder-based cleansers. I'm curious to know like what your thoughts are on that and how it goes with FMC.
You mentioned powder-based cleansers? Is that what you said?
Yeah, or just even powder-based shampoos. So just like a new formulation, but with the eye on sustainability.
A key part of that, the powder phenomenon is about waterless.
Yes.
So waterless is linked to clean, because when you
and
remove,
waste and yeah
exactly
and
but when you
yeah.
when you remove water, you remove the need for preservatives, and so the formulations are automatically cleaner, and you don't have to worry about, you know, the toxic ingredients that preserve shelf life. And the powderless phenomenon, it's also if it's waterless, it also means easier transport. Suits our nomadic lifestyles, but more compact to transport, so more eco-friendly.
Right, because some of them, like in the example of Blue Land, it's a household cleaning company. I'm starting to see more and more in the beauty space, but you buy one bottle, right. It's beautiful, and then the refills are just tablets.
Right.
So it's just an interesting thing that has some
applications. There are many ways of kind of splitting it in many directions.
Yeah.
So one additional way is if a product is waterless, you can moment of use, you can activate it. You add the water at the moment of use, or you mix the ingredients at the moment of use, and they're at their most potent.
It's interesting. Hanakura kind of did that, you know, when that was really popular.
So we're going to take a break now. We'll come right back with Laura and talk a little bit more about what's happening at Makeup New York and what she's excited to see and learn about.
Here comes Makeup in Los Angeles, the only and unique B2B makeup event at your doorstep. The next edition, February 11th and 12th in Los Angeles at the LA Convention Center. Makeup in Los Angeles is a unique place where you can find from alpha to omega. Every piece of a makeup and skincare product and make your own line, advised and guided by the savoir-faire of the most qualified experts in the beauty industry. Whatever your project is, there you can find the best contact. You can ask for an invitation at the show's website, makeup-in-losangeles.com.
So I'd love to hear more from you, Laura, about, you know, how, you know, you go to, as a trend forecaster, you go to a lot of the trade shows and stuff. What are you looking for at Makeup In and trade shows like this? And how does it kind of give you a pulse of where trends are and how you think about the science of trends in your own business?
So let me preface my answer by, if I may, giving an analogy that women will relate to. It's like it's like having a mammogram. When you go to your very, very first trade show, it's like having a baseline mammogram, which gives some information, but not very much. And when you have subsequent mammograms, you can see the shifts and the changes. And going to trade shows around the world, whether it's B2B or B2C trade shows, so Makeup In, which is the B2B, the ingredients, the manufacturers, packaging, and the B2C, the indie brands that are pushing boundaries and challenging the multinationals. Tracking innovation or even identifying it across regions over time, locally, globally, and seeing the shifts over time gives us the signals. And we have a team of editors, roving editors around the world who cover all these shows and take notes, and we convene and we have ongoing dialogue about what we've seen and what stopped us in our tracks. And as a general rule, there's a lot of signals, and the easiest way to distill how we work is to pay attention to what you pay attention to. So anything that stops you in your tracks is worth paying attention to.
So I have a question about some of the trade shows. When you're out in the market, do you find, because true innovation, people usually keep under wraps.
That's a good question.
And do you think that dealing with the manufacturers and the companies at the trade shows, there is that just the beginning of a conversation to learn more about what they have? Because I know I've worked with a lot of companies where once you start to build the relationship, other things may exist in their pipeline. And
Right. I mean, in some cases, you get the goodies, and then there are some more goodies at the back. Absolutely. As with everything, it's about building relationships and working with various manufacturers or color, you know, the pigment companies or the ingredient suppliers. When there are relationships and there's trust, and they will share the innovation, the newness, knowing that, for example, at Beauty Streams, we have the eyeballs of multinationals, smaller companies, and that we accurately report and share insights on what we believe will be the breakthrough innovation. So trust comes into play, absolutely.
So what have you seen in 2019 that you think has really taken over in the makeup category, you know, whether it's online or at retail?
Well, it's impossible. If you're looking for a phenomenon, it's impossible to escape CBD.
Okay.
In makeup also. Mm-hmm. So CBD infused mascara, just CBD perby. It's a CBD world.
That's a category.
Yeah. And so the macro trends, you know, I was talking before about catching the waves and figuring out where we are in the trend cycle. Mm-hmm. So for example, with CBD, there's such an explosion. In the beginning, there was a bit of mistrust. Is this a flash in the pan thing? Mm-hmm. Just the latest ingredient. But when, you know, we noticed that when medical community is investing big research money into the benefits across categories, we start paying attention.
Right.
And what we're seeing with CBD, for example, is, again, it's about discerning quality. Where is the CBD? Where is the hemp sourced? Is it a company? Is it a manufacturing company? Is it a vertically integrated? Does it tell the story of how the plants are farmed? Is it trustworthy? Some of these companies have QR codes which take you directly to information about their quality testing.
Interesting.
So it's all about the credibility, mm-hmm. quality, veracity, authenticity. Whether it's in mascara or on skin or ingestible form.
Well, that's such an important question, too, about what is tried and true and what is tested, how is it tested, and who's defining what is safe, right, for the consumer. So how does that all come together at this point? Because it really is so new. In the past few shows that I've been to, I think you've been also, Karen, I saw so many brands, and it was all about CBD.
Right.
And whether it was the skincare or the wellness, there were shots, there were ingestibles, there were edibles. I mean, it was really fun and fascinating.
It might seem confounding at first glance, mm-hmm. but actually it's fairly becomes quickly apparent
mm-hmm.
for those of us who spend a lot of time comparing and contrasting mm. brands and approaches where the value and the veracity lies. So, for example, is it a farm that the brand owns? Where is it coming from?
Right.
Just the sourcing of the ingredient. What is the story of
the backstory?
Correct. And back to those certifications.
Right.
And also transparency.
Mm-hmm.
So open things up. Let us have a look behind the curtain. Tell us the story. Do you tell that story well?
Right.
And that is, for example, a key part of the storytelling these days for CBD let's see whether we trust this.
Right.
Will it make a difference? And obviously the acid test is the repeat purchase. You know, did it work?
Right.
Should I buy it again?
I think there's more increasingly more education on the space because there's certainly experts, but it's a little bit more challenging online. So thinking about CBD oils and, you know, understanding that there's food grade CBD oils versus not. Or right now, like, there's so much conversation about CBDs, but there's like hundreds of cannabinoids that I think we're starting to see like really interesting new, you know, categories. So I think it's broader than CBD, but more about cannabis and medicinal purposes and like the value that plant-based product has in terms of the benefits.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it'll be interesting. And then seeing more brands doing like clinical trials and taking it more seriously.
But why do you say you think it's more challenging online to communicate
just
the value?
From not communicating the value, but I know a lot of the early stage startups are having challenges where you can't do payment processing.
Oh,
you can't do direct-to-consumer
for
certain products. So, like, Shopify will not let you do a checkout cart. So you can do WordPress. But people are finding ways around it. And so, you know, it's interesting. And that's, you know, we're seeing the regulatory environment change. And even FDA is changing things with CBD and products that are in market now that are no longer going to be in New York.
Right.
So there's a lot of barriers. But it's really interesting because I think, you know, we'll see how the market shifts, but the demand is certainly there.
I have to say, it's so
interesting, though, right?
An underexplored topic when we speak about CBD or hemp. Where is all this pain coming from?
Pain from the consumer.
Just pain. Yes,
people are suffering with so many things.
Whether it's physical or mental pain. I mean, for me, the big overriding message is pain.
Oh, interesting.
And help me, and soothe me, and alleviate me, and give me a respite from my day-to-day. And what does it all mean? And so there's, you know, there's the immediate story of the quality, but then there are the bigger questions about
why are so many people complaining now
And I'm not just talking about chronic physical right. pain, but also the
emotional, mental. Yes. Well, I think it's a bigger conversation now more than ever because of social media, and people are talking about these things.
And stressful times as well, uncertain stressful times.
Which is great that people are talking and communicating and sharing their feelings. So that gives out companies an opportunity to find a reason to help and soothe.
But also, it also points to how we us consumers are looking for, still seeking magic elixirs.
Always.
We want the pain to go away. Take it away. Mm. Please remove it. And I think for me personally, it's that deeper part of what's happening to us.
I think it's the food. A lot of it's food related.
Well, I also think it's an element of it's socially acceptable. You know, if you go way back when, back in the day, there are in certain groups where, like, you don't talk about getting therapy. And then it's like, oh, yeah, getting therapy is, like, really cool. And, of course, you get therapy. And now it's around in certain circles, right? And now it's around the idea of self-care. And I think one of the hottest topics right now is around vulnerability, if you look at Brené Brown. And so the idea of, within certain groups, of self-awareness, consciousness, mental health, and self-care is being talked about. And then the broader audience is saying, oh, wait, is that something I should be thinking of? So there's this consumer mindset shift around these areas. And then I think it relates to wellness and mindfulness, but it's really interesting. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of commercial opportunity
around
it. Yes.
So Beauty Streams are noticing self-care emerging as a massive category. And self-care, the name implies indulgence, but it's actually about self-preservation. So when you think about the Me Too movement and the legacy of all that, it's no wonder that self-care is emerging as this massive category. And it can be defined in so many different ways. There's the hormonal, looking after our hormones as right. we age and go through different life stages. There's sexual wellness. There's the indulgence. There are all these aspects that a link to beauty. So beauty as now being more and more synonymous with self-care is something that we're very excited about at Beauty Streams. It's here to stay also.
So thank you so much for joining us. It's been fantastic learning about you and Beauty Streams and your in-depth knowledge about different trends and things that are happening today. And would love to have a final thought from you, if you can share, and also how our listeners can reach you.
So as a final thought, at shows like Makeup In, and with all the zillions of signals and pulses that we come across every single day, a final thought at Beauty Streams is making sense of it all, looking far out in order to look closer in. I think that would be the ultimate message that we like to share with clients, with everybody, is how to make sense of it all by having the long view and the short view and seeing the sweet spot for our clients. And you can find us on beautystreams.com or reach me at laura@beautystreams.com.
Thank you so much for joining us. This is Abby Wallach signing off with my co-host, Karen Moon.
See you next time.
Thanks so much.
This has been Beauty is Your Business, produced by Mouth Media Network. Copyright 2019. Keep in touch on Instagram and Facebook at Mouth Media Network. And find prior episodes at beautyisyourbusiness.com and wherever the best podcasts are found. Your brand message can be on this show. Email us to find out more at podcast@mouthmedianetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
This is Mouth Media Network. Amplify and connect.